back to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell Reed, my co-host Gwyn Scheltema, and our guest this week, Heather Chisvin. So Heather, you were a journalist and radio documentary maker for many years, as well as working in advertising. What were the greatest differences when you turned to writing fiction? And what were the greatest challenges?
The greatest differences were that instead of trying to make everything shorter and smaller, either to fit into 30 seconds or a column of newspaper, I had as many pages as I wanted. I could make up, I would never make up facts and reality and history, but I could make things up, which I didn't have the freedom to do in journalism or advertising. Believe it or not, when you're in advertising, you do have to tell the truth. Although right. People think that you don't, if you lie, the product will only sell once, so it doesn't serve the marketer to lie about the product. So it was a completely blank slate, and I didn't know where to start. So I didn't take any classes. I read my favorite authors mm-hmm. again and again and again and again until I could quote them. And as I read them, I would say to myself, why does this work for me? Why is she putting in what the weather is like here? How do you do mood? How do you do tone? Do I prefer speaking in the first person or the third person? How do I do transitions from one scene to another? It's like baby steps from the very beginning.
It seems to me you brought your skills as a researcher to the whole problem.
I did. I brought my skills as a researcher to the problem and to the book.
Yes, okay. So tell us a little bit more about Esther and Anna. How much of their life does the book cover?
The book covers basically their lives from when they were born until they're in their mid-70s. They were born in Russia, and when they were young, when Anna was 5 and Esther was 9, Alexander the second or third, I keep forgetting which, was killed. His son, the third, Alexander the third, blamed it on the Jews. That's when the persecution of Jews, the pogroms, began the first time. Mm. Their mother decided to send them to Winnipeg with the wealthy employers. She was their seamstress. So they arrive at age 5 and 9 in Winnipeg. They stay in Winnipeg. Esther stays there her whole life. Anna, whose pet name is Benki, moves to New York when she's 15. They live the rest of their lives separately, Esther in Winnipeg, Anna in New York. Anna feeling all the time that she has to... I'll stop now because I just answered your question. Okay.
Okay. The characters are so real to you. And in the book, too. So how did you find your way into their characters?
This is a really interesting question, and I've heard so many writers say this that it's become a cliche, but it's true. They found their way into me. I didn't find their way into them. Some of the time I didn't know, at the best times, I didn't know whether I was writing the book or reading it. It was coming from somewhere, and where it was coming from, I've heard many authors say that you end up writing with the issues that you're struggling with in life, things that have been important to you, still are important to you, things you're trying to solve. And Esther and Anna have a relationship like a mother and child, and it's very much based on my relationship with my daughter. As they grow up, you don't want to know what's going on. You want to know everything, and yet you don't want to know anything. And you're tied by a kind of glue so that even when things are going wrong and you try to pull yourself away, you keep wanting to call and say, is everything okay? So that's basically who they are. Mm-hmm. Anna is the child, Esther is the mother. And it came very much from my internal experience of being a mother.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do think that we do write out of that.
Yes, we do.
Subconscious core.
Yeah, trying to solve things again and again and again.
Mm. You've obviously found it a very satisfactory form of writing, and you're going to write another one.
Mm-hmm.
Have you already got a plan for it?
I have an outline, and that's all I have. And I've only started writing the first chapter, and already things are occurring to me. And again, I'm not reading anything other than writers that I like. I wake up in the morning and I make sure that I read somebody that inspires me.
So who are your favorite authors?
Well, it changes. I never grow tired of My Antonia by Willa Cather. I could read that again and again. The longing she expresses in that book just blows me away, and if I could ever get anywhere close to that. I like her. At the moment, I have fallen in love with Alice McDermott. I just love her writing. Mm. So right now, I'm reading Alice McDermott again and again and again. I like William Trevor. I love William Trevor. I like Sue Miller.
So, I know you were pleased to have Second Story publish your book. What do you think of the facets of the book that specially appeal to them?
Well, Second Story specializes in feminist literature and Jewish literature. Mm. And this fell into that category very nicely.
And what was it about Second Story that you made it your preferred publisher?
Same thing. Yes.
Okay, so how about reading us some more from... Okay. Around the heart.
Okay, I'm going to where Esther has stayed in Winnipeg. She's happily married to a rich lawyer. Anna has gone to New York, and she's decided she's going to stay in New York, and she finds they didn't want her to go, but she finds work in the garment area. She finds a rooming house, and then Monday morning at 5, I sponged my one good suit, put on my hat, and walked to Hester Street, where I joined a line of women waiting for day work in the clothing factories. There must have been 100 women in that line. It ran along Hester and around the corner along Center. Most of the women were Orthodox Jews with horsehair wigs and heavy dresses and shawls. They were tired and hot in the July heat and cranky, and they closed ranks and glared at me wordlessly as I walked by. It took 2 hours to reach the front of the line. "Can you sew?" a man sitting at a small table in front of the long brick building asked me. "Did you make that, for instance?" he asked, gesturing at my suit with his chin. "Yes, sir, I did," I lied, smoothing my jacket down. "But I'd prefer ironing if there's an opening in that department." "Department," he snickered. "You'll start on the machines like everyone else. Do you work on Shabbos?" "Yes, sir." "Good girl, we'll get along just fine." He wrote a number on the corner of a page in his ledger, ripped it off, and handed it to me. "Go up to the third floor and give this to Sam." Next. The third floor was a long, narrow room with 3 rows of skinny tables running end to end along its length. Sewing machines sat 3 feet apart in front of each table. Wooden chairs were upended on the table beside each machine. A banner along one wall of the room read, "Weiner and Son, Manhattan Manufacturers of Fine Ladies' Coats." A ban under it read, "No talking, no laughing, no unauthorized break." Every morning at 6:45, a whistle blew and 45 women, myself included, shuffled up the staircase. We lifted the chairs off the tables, righted them in front of our machines, and sat down. 5 minutes later, 3 men with baskets walked between the tables and put thread, bobbins, scissors, and coat sections, cut and ready for stitching, on the table in front of us. At 10, a whistle sounded. We pushed our chairs back and shuffled to an empty room across the hall, where we rotated our heads and massaged each other's shoulders and opened and closed our fingers. 15 minutes later, the whistle sounded again, and we went back to our machines. We had a half-hour break for lunch when we were allowed to go outside, and a 15-minute afternoon break. The final whistle sounded at 8 in the evening. We stood up, placed our scissors, bobbins, and thread on the tables in front of our machines, upended our chairs, and staggered out. When we were gone, supervisors went through the room with baskets and brooms. If they found anything other than useless remnants and thread around the machines or on the floor, the entire table was docked 3 cents a person. If anyone talked during working hours, both parties were fined the first time and fired the second. If you happened to go into labor, which wasn't unusual in a room full of Orthodox Jewish women, you were sent home and someone waiting in the line downstairs was sent up to replace you. When Sonia, one of the workers on my shift, went into labor, I asked Sam if I could accompany her home. "You accompany Sonia home, and you accompany yourself right out of a job," he said. "Get my drift?" Another time, when we had just come back from a break, I watched a broad-shouldered young woman walk over to an older woman and pull her out of her chair. "Take my chair again, and it isn't the only thing you'll lose." I was too tired to interfere.
Thank you, Heather.
You're welcome.
Many thanks to you, Heather, for introducing us to your novel, A Fist Around the Heart, published by Second Story Press. Where can our listeners buy your books?
They can buy it on Amazon. Mm-hmm. They can buy it at Chapters Indigo. They can buy it at Furby Books in Port Hope. They can buy it at all the bookstores in Winnipeg.
Well, I guess other bookstores can order it.
Sure.
Yes. So, to connect with us, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for who we might interview in future programs to us at our website, wordonthehills.com, where all these programs are archived and available to listeners at any time. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio.